Lieutenant John Taze found himself at a slight tactical disadvantage. He was leading a force of 18 Texas Rangers, and his orders were to safeguard the journey of three American businessmen. But at the moment, he was standing eyeball to eyeball with close to 1,000 Mexican insurgents, and whoever blinked first would very likely wind up cold meat. Somewhat like a man who is a bear by the tail, Lieutenant Taze had developed a sudden liking for faraway places. That morning, as false dawn had given way to first light, the besieged Americans saw that all hope of escape was gone. Under cover of darkness, the villagers of San Elizario had encircled with hastily dug rifle pits the adobe hut in which the Americans were trapped, and the sun's brilliant streamers glinted off a solid ring of blued steel. Rangers and civilians alike gazed at the fortifications in dull apathy. After 7 days of intermittent fighting, any hope that the army would lift the siege had long since faded. Time had run out, and to a man they knew full well that the Mexicans would exact a grim price for the misery inflicted on them in the last few months. Waiting for the final attack, Charles Howard could only reflect on the vicious bitch called fate. Earlier that year, he had formed a combine with various El Paso businessmen for the sole purpose of cornering the Rio Grande salt trade. East of town, across 100 miles of barren desert, lay a small chain of salt lakes. Though only recently arrived in Texas, Howard was a man of considerable ambition, an opportunist not above an unsavory deal if enough money were involved. And he was quick to grasp that whoever held a monopoly on the salt lakes could name his own price for that precious commodity. Though Howard bore a remarkable resemblance to a well-fed hog, he was an affable, persuasive talker. Political skullduggery was a game he understood well, and within a short time, his combine had been allowed to file a claim on the distant lakes. While such grants were normally restricted on public service lands, the burgeoning salt cartel had, in effect, been given a license to steal. With legal possession of the lakes, they could collect a fee on every fanega of salt hauled away. And there were none to prevent them from raising the price to whatever the traffic would bear. But Howard and his cronies had miscalculated the temper of the people. Throughout the memory of many generations, natives from both sides of the Rio Grande had driven their ox carts to the dry lakes, braving a fortnight in the waterless desert so that their families might have salt. Moreover, they also bartered salt in the interior regions of Chihuahua, and the gummy cakes they gouged from the earth represented the primary money crop of every village along the border. The El Paso Combine posed a threat not only to the natives' own humble needs, but more significantly, to the meager livelihood they had been able to glean from the salt trade itself. Reaction was swift and violent. Under the leadership of Don Luis Cardis, the insurgents had captured Charles Howard at San Elizario, the village closest to the salt lakes. There, they forced him to relinquish all claim to the disputed lands, presumably squelching his salt racket in the bud. Then, in exchange for his life, they extracted his promise never to return and sent him packing down the road. Though Howard was built along the lines of a whale, he was hardly a jovial fat man accustomed to turning the other cheek. 10 days later, he caught Don Luis alone in El Paso and gave him an overdose of buckshot, leaving the Mexicans leaderless, if not wholly defanged. Public officials immediately set the telegraph wires humming, urging the governor to request assistance from troops stationed at nearby Fort Bliss. Of the 15,000 souls along the upper Rio Grande, roughly 1,000 were Norte Americanos. Should a race war erupt, they would be doomed by the sheer weight of numbers. More distressing still, El Paso was isolated by an arid waste of some 500 miles from the nearest American settlement. With visions of the entire community being wiped out overnight, local politicians demanded forceful action from the government in Austin. Characteristically, the governor disdained the use of federal troops and sent instead a company of Texas Rangers, commanded by Lieutenant John Taze. Never wanting for a glib argument, Howard somehow convinced Lieutenant Taze that the Mexicans were in open revolt. After all, fewer than 5 decades had passed since Texans defeated Santa Anna at San Jacinto. Only a fool would doubt that the greasers remained loyal to Mexico.